Thank you. May it please the court, your honors, counsel, Gregory Winton, counsel for the petitioners in this matter. We're here because the NTSB in this case, along with the FAA, has decided that a limited Supreme Court case known as Buchanan has limited the availability of attorney's fees under the Equal Access to Justice Act. In this particular case, our inquiry into whether or not Buchanan actually applies is really limited as far as the procedure and facts of the case and how it progressed. Specifically, this court most recently, and less than 3 weeks ago, decided a case by the name of Pasternak against the National Transportation Safety Board. In that case, this court found that
a urine testing case?
I'm sorry?
A urine testing
case? It was, Your Honor. That the NTSB rendered a decision in that case on a factual dispute in which this court found there was no substantial evidence to support the fact as found by the National Transportation Safety Board. I will submit to you that the case that we have here today is the exact same situation. If you look at the appendix, A-298, which is actually the underlying decision rendered by the National Transportation Safety Board, it is page 18 of the opinion and order, and specifically, the NTSB found the law judge did not dismiss the case with prejudice. That's a factual determination. If you look at the record in this case, which is pretty minute because we didn't have a hearing on the full merits, but you will find nowhere in the record of this case that the law judge did either dismiss with prejudice or dismiss without prejudice. Now, as we all know, practicing law, a dismissal with or without prejudice is usually brought by the plaintiff because it protects the plaintiff in bringing the suit again later on if it so desires. In this case, and I will tell you that I've practiced before Judge Fowler, the chief judge of the National Transportation Safety Board, for 20 years now, I have never seen one of his orders terminating a proceeding have the phrase with or without prejudice. And quite frankly, until this case, it has never been necessary for the NTSB law judges to distinguish whether they are dismissing the case with or without prejudice or terminating the proceeding with or without prejudice. See, what's happening here is the Equal Access to Justice Act, at least as interpreted by the Buchanan decision by the Supreme Court, the NTSB is trying to take a square peg and fit it into a round hole. I actually listened to the oral argument that you can get online of the Buchanan decision. The Supreme Court never intended for that decision to make its way down the line to the Equal Access to Justice Act as it applied to an administrative proceeding before the before the National Transportation Safety Board, which would affect the rights of pilots in an adversarial adjudication. Now, keep in mind, the NTSB's decision relies on two factual findings which may involve some legal interpretation. One, that the law judge did not dismiss the case with prejudice. No record, no substantial evidence of that. Therefore, it must be vacated. And number two, that it did not involve an adversarial adjudication. Now, the government has seemingly abandoned that second finding by the NTSB in their brief, their reply brief. So it appears to me that we're only dealing with whether or not the record supports by substantial evidence that the law judge did dismiss the case with prejudice.
Are you familiar with this case called Administrator versus Elmer A. Tanner, 1984 case?
Not specifically.
A National Transportation Safety Board. Well, you said you practiced there a long time. That's the only reason I'm raising it.
Right.
And in that case, there was an ALJ order very much like this. And the board said that the ALJ's order did not constitute a dismissal with prejudice. I mean, it's virtually identical language in the ALJ's decision. So, I mean, at least there's some precedent by the board as to when they treat these things with precedent.
There may be
prejudice or not prejudice.
And unfortunately, I'm not familiar right now with that case, so I can't say what the circumstances were and why they addressed it. But I will tell you that if this court has a question, if the NTSB had a question as to whether or not the dismissal was with or without prejudice, you need to remand it to Judge Fowler and say, Judge, when you terminated the proceeding, did you mean with or without prejudice? Now, keep in mind, the procedural role in which this played out will tell us whether he intended it to be with or without prejudice. Under 49 Code of Federal Regulation 826.24 is when an application may be filed. It says an application may be filed whenever the applicant has prevailed. That's a question that we have to look into. But in no case later than 30 days after the board's final disposition. If you look at the definition of final disposition under Rule 826.24, it says final disposition means the latter of a issuance of a final order or other final resolution of the proceeding. If Judge Fowler accepted my EJIA application for my clients and rendered a decision that we were the prevailing party and we were entitled to fees, you would assume then that Judge Fowler intended his order terminating the proceeding to be a final order or a final resolution. The FAA never challenged that at the time that I made my application for fees, that the case wasn't final. If the case wasn't final, then my EJIA time hadn't begun. But it was granted, so it assumes to me, or we can assume, that Judge Fowler intended that to be an order terminating the proceeding with prejudice. But again, if it needs to be remanded to him for that reason, maybe we should do that.
So you're saying your application wasn't rejected as premature?
Correct.
Okay.
It should have been, or at least the FAA could have made the argument. What are you doing? You're not entitled to EJIA fees. Not because I'm not a prevailing party, but because the case isn't over yet. We haven't finished. We still have a right to refile, which isn't the case here. But this court has specifically addressed the issue of whether or not a dismissal with prejudice is in fact a final judgment in which would confer prevailing party status. In the District of Columbia versus Strauss, that case, even though it was dismissed with prejudice, it didn't confer prevailing party status, but for a specific reason. It was dismissed as moot. It was an IDAA case, and so that was a limited exception. But this court in that decision did recognize that other circuits, I think the Fifth and Seventh Circuit, did in those cases dismiss a case with prejudice and find that it did confer prevailing party status because the res judicata effect of the dismissal with prejudice protects the plaintiff. In this case, the defendant, my clients. So if it's with prejudice, the FAA cannot refile the case. We can enforce that with the judicial decree or order terminating the proceeding, and we're a prevailing party.
I mean, would you agree that other circuits have read Buchanan a little less strictly than this circuit?
They may have, but you know, and then we get into...
No, but I mean... Isn't that significant in terms of whether or not your clients are prevailing parties?
It is, but it's very distinguishable because most of those circuits applied Buchanan to a civil action, which is under a different statute than the Equal Access to Justice Act concerning administrative proceeding under 5 U.S.C. 504. So without even getting into that whole argument...
I thought the Supreme Court had said those two statutes are to be treated the same.
In certain circumstances, they should. But in this circumstance, if the Supreme Court ever knew that that decision was going to affect a pilot in an adversary adjudication concerning their piloting certificate, I'm sure they would have clarified what the holding meant. I listened, again, to the arguments. One of the justices said, if I sue my neighbor because they're making too much noise and my neighbor stops making the noise and it's dismissed as moot, am I a prevailing party? Well, no. You got the desired outcome, but you didn't prevail on the merits, and there's no judicial imprimatur that's going to help you later on. In this case, my clients are sitting there with their pilot certificates in pocket making a living, and all of a sudden the FAA comes after them, seemingly without substantial justification, and they have to defend themselves. It's not a catalyst theory. There's nothing that happened that we did other than defend the action, you know, zealously, that caused the FAA to rethink it and dismiss the case and say, we're not going to win.
What about the background principle reflected in Rule 41, the civil rules, that unless it says it's with prejudice, then the dismissal is assumed to be without prejudice?
Right, and that went to my argument that we're trying to put a round peg in a square hole. We're trying to say that these rules regarding prevailing party should apply both to the 5 U.S.C. 504 and the other civil actions, okay? That's fine, but if you look at the underlying actions, The civil actions have a completely different set of procedural rules than the administrative actions. So if Judge Fowler, the chief judge of the NTSB, had never before required to put in his orders with or without dismissal, or I, as a practicing attorney in that realm, know of no rule by the NTSB that requires that finding with or without prejudice, and until now it had no substantial reason to be in there, then we're taking a set of rules, the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, and now applying them to an administrative proceeding that doesn't have that same strict rule structure, and now we're being penalized because we're not aware of that.
Someone's going to be surprised.
Somebody's going to be surprised, without a doubt. And if I may reserve some of my time for rebuttal, just one more thing. When we talk about, I'll reserve that for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Ben Kingsley for the Federal Aviation Administration. This case presents two questions and really only two questions. The first question is whether Buchanan's interpretation of the term prevailing a party applies to EJA's administrative adjudication provision at 5 U.S.C. 504. The second question is whether petitioners met the Buchanan standard in this case. With respect to the first question, it's quite clear that the Supreme Court meant Buchanan to apply much more broadly than petitioners claim. The court based its holding on the generally prevailing legal interpretation of the term prevailing party as a legal term of art. They cited the Black's Law Dictionary repeatedly, and their holding was basically that whenever Congress uses the term prevailing party, Congress uses it in accordance with that legal term of art. And so for that reason, this court has applied Buchanan in many situations beyond the two statutes and beyond the fact patterns at issue in Buchanan itself. And this court has said that Buchanan should apply to statutes that contain prevailing party language unless there's some good reason for it not to apply. In this case, we're looking at a statutory provision that contains completely identical language to EJA's civil provision, was passed at the same time as by Congress, and as part of the same statute. So there's no good reason to not apply the same reasoning that this court has applied to EJA civil to the EJA's administrative provision in this case. So to the extent petitioners argue that Buchanan doesn't apply or it only stands for a rejection of the catalyst theory, Buchanan itself, its terms are much broader than that, and this court has held it to be much broader than that. With respect to the second question,
opposing counsel here quoted passages in Buchanan saying it was to be, that it was narrowly aimed.
Well, I don't believe that's the case, and
Did he not quote such passages?
Well, I'm not sure if he quoted such passages.
I'm not positive either, but that's my recollection.
But regardless, this court in Thomas versus NSF was presented with the argument that Buchanan was a limited holding, and this court rejected that argument and said quite clearly that Buchanan stands for the general definition of the term prevailing party in federal fee-shifting statutes when used by Congress. And this court has said that repeatedly since Buchanan, and that reasoning extends to this case. So assuming that Buchanan does apply, which it should, Buchanan requires a judicially imposed material alteration in the legal status of the parties on the merits of the case for a party to be a prevailing party.
I'm not sure how that factor works in a prevailing defendant case.
Well, I think that you can look at it the same way, and this court has applied that same standard.
I mean, that really just funnels into your point about whether it's dismissal with prejudice or without prejudice, I suppose, is one way to look at it.
Well, to some extent, yes, I believe it goes to the with or without prejudice question. And we analogize in our briefs to dismissals with prejudice and without prejudice because it's a good comparison to the civil context where there's a lot of case law on that.
An alteration of the legal status isn't going to occur in a prevailing defendant case because the defendant won.
Well, the prevailing defendant will have a res judicata judgment on the merits.
Right, so that goes to the with prejudice, without prejudice question.
I agree that with respect to the part of the Buchanan test that asks whether there's been a material alteration in the legal status of the parties, that goes to the with or without prejudice question. But those are not, that's not the only thing that's required by Buchanan. And
Before you leave that, counsel said, well, we should remand. So we find out whether the judge intended this to be with or without prejudice. What's your response to that?
Well, I think there are at least two reasons that's not true. The first reason
What do you mean it's not true?
Well, first, you characterized the holding of the NTSB on, that this was without prejudice as a finding of fact, and I don't think that's the case. I think that that's the NTSB's interpretation of its rules of procedure, and the rules of procedure make very clear at 49 CFR 821.12 that the FAA can voluntarily withdraw the complaint whenever it wants on its own accord without approval from the ALJ. And aware of those rules...
But they treat that as a final determination. Is that right under their rules?
They treat that as ending the case, and that's why the ALJ.
But they treat it as a final determination under their rules.
Yeah, in the sense that it ends the case, but I'm not sure if it finally determines the merits of the case. And I think that the NTSB's holding is not a finding of fact because it's interpreting their own rules of procedure. And I think that Judge Kavanaugh's question about Rule 41 is instructive in the sense that the general standard in civil cases is that without an order dismissing the case on the merits, the dismissal is assumed to be without prejudice.
Do we know whether the board has a similar rule?
As far as I know, the board does not have a similar rule, and the only case I could find was the case that Your Honor cited on that.
Why don't we ask them? I mean, this goes to Judge Rogers' question. Why not remand?
Well, so I think the reason that a remand is not necessary regardless is because even to the extent that the voluntary dismissal legally altered the status of the parties, FAA couldn't bring the complaint again, it still doesn't satisfy Buchanan because it's not judicially imposed. And that's a really important part of Buchanan. And when this court has applied Buchanan, it has required, among other things, a judicial pronouncement accompanied by judicial relief. And that's clearly not here in this case.
Go ahead. If the order were to say this is with prejudice, and when you're talking about a defendant, why isn't that judicial relief to the defendant?
Well, I think that goes to the oil and chemical and atomic workers case where this court was reviewing a district court that had issued an order dismissing the case, and the district court purported in its fee determination that had been on the merits and had been judicial pronouncement accompanied by judicial relief. And this court said that wasn't sufficient because the case had already been resolved before the district court had said that the parties had entered into a joint stipulation dismissing the case, and at that point in time there wasn't anything left for the district court to do. So its order had no real legal effect because the case had already been decided. And I think that the same thing would be true in this case if the FAA had voluntarily withdrawn its complaint as under the board's rules it was entitled to do as of right whenever it wanted. And then the ALJ had afterwards said, well, I dismissed the case on the merits. That would be unnecessary because the case would no longer exist because the complaint serves as the only basis of the case. So I think that the key thing to...
Well, let me just be clear about this. Under that analysis, then, there was no reason for the ALJ to make any pronouncement at all?
Well, the ALJ didn't make a pronouncement. The ALJ only issued an order that said the case was terminated.
But the agency formally filed a complaint. So that was before the ALJ.
Yes.
So the ALJ had to do something with that complaint, or there's an open docket.
Exactly. And I would just...
And so the ALJ says this case, let's just hypothetically say, is permanently and forever dismissed against these pilots. With prejudice, res judicata. Suppose all that's in the opinion.
But I don't think that... So the ALJ, and I think that it's interesting, or Your Honor's question hinted at this, that the ALJ's termination order did only serve to close the docket, and that was the only thing that was left at that point in time.
Are you saying that even if the ALJ had said this is with prejudice, this is on the merits, it would just be wrong?
It would be totally unnecessary under the OCAW case because the case was gone.
It would be unnecessary for the ALJ to have done that.
Yes.
But having done it, you would say what? That it's without effect?
I would say it's without effect, as this court said in the OCAW case, that it would be similar under those reasons. And I think an analogy to Buchanan, and we'll have to flip the switch situation there a little bit and look at that as what happens when a plaintiff brings a case against a defendant, and the plaintiff in Buchanan was challenging what it considered to be unlawful action by the defendant, the state in that case, and the defendant is able to voluntarily and did voluntarily moot the case under its own power. And at that point in time, the case was moot, and it wouldn't have mattered after the case was moot if the district court in that case had decided to go on and say, well, I rule in favor of the plaintiffs, because the case was gone at the point in time the mootness occurred. And I think the same thing can be said here. Once the complaint is gone, there's no charges against the charged parties, the petitioners in this case, and the proceeding is basically over.
And the proceeding had the proceeding had not reached the point where, in order to withdraw the complaint, permission had to be obtained from the administrative judge.
Well, actually,
is that correct?
That's correct. Under the rules, there doesn't appear to be a point in time where the ALJ would have to approve of the withdrawal of the complaint, and that's fairly clear. So I think that the key facts of this case are simply that the FAA initiated these complaints and then withdrew them before the ALJ issued any ruling on the merits, and did so completely voluntarily. And at that point in time, no ruling had been made, and none of the elements of Buchanan had been satisfied. So if there are no further questions.
And I think in your brief, didn't you then go on to say that in any event, we could have rebrought the case?
Because there's
no limitations bar.
Well, I'm not sure if that would be true. I don't know whether the stale complaint rule would apply in this situation, because it has a good cause exception, and presumably if FAA wanted to reinitiate these complaints, it would need good cause, and we could only hypothesize whether that would be the case or what would happen. But
they'd have to show good cause. Yeah.
Yeah, they would have to show good cause, exactly.
Is it good cause and a public interest showing?
I'm not sure about that, but I'm not sure that it really matters, because even if this is a statute of limitations, that doesn't confer prevailing party status under Buchanan, because it's not judicially imposed. It doesn't result from the judicial proceeding.
Well, that's not entirely clear. It's the effect. Yeah, but I think the standard is disjunctive. That can be for good cause or a public interest finding. I would have thought that the agency would maintain that all of its cases were brought in the public interest. If the agency refiled after the expiration of the presumptive limitation period, saying it was in the public interest that it do so, if the effect of the prior judgment, if the prior judgment were to be a bar, or if the running of the statute of limitations were a bar, let's say they couldn't make the public interest statement. They're just saying, we think we have good cause, the ALJ disagrees, they don't have good cause.
Yeah.
It's the entry of the order and the running of the period that would have combined to have this effect.
Well, that's correct, but the running of the period would have happened even if the proceedings had never taken place in the first place, and we wouldn't describe the petitioners as prevailing parties if the FAA had never brought the action. And in that sense, the statute of limitations itself is providing the leaf, or the stale complaint rule is providing the leaf, and it's not the proceedings itself.
Here, the complaint was filed before the initial period would have run. And was it pending before the ALJ throughout the rest of that period?
I believe so.
And the order issued after the expiration?
The order issued after the expiration, or the termination order issued after the expiration, yes.
So the ALJ could have issued the order before or after the running of that period. Not sure why you say holding it until after the running of the period means that the order had no effect. It had the effect that it would not have had if issued earlier.
Well, it's not the order itself that has the effect. It's the voluntary withdrawal of the complaint that has the effect, and that's voluntary on the part of the FAA, so it's not judicially imposed. I would say that once the complaint had been withdrawn, in order to reinitiate the complaints, the FAA would need to establish good cause, but that the withdrawal itself was voluntary and didn't come from the order itself.
And that would, in any event, be a separate bar that is not from the order. It's just the coincidence of when the statute might run, or the stale complaint rule, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. It's the coincidence between the stale complaint rule.
Statute of limitations could be way in the future. It could be have gone in that period when the order was issued, right?
Exactly. And if, as we know, plaintiffs often file cases in civil cases right before the end of the limitations period. And if a plaintiff files a case a day before the limitations period ends and then 2 days later voluntarily withdraws it before responsive pleading has taken place, we wouldn't describe that plaintiff as the defendant as a prevailing party, and they wouldn't be, and it wouldn't be the statute of limitations that provided, or it wouldn't be the judicial proceeding.
And that dismissal would still have been without prejudice, technically, and it's the separate operation of the statute of limitations.
Exactly. If there are no further questions?
No.
All right.
Not. Thank you.
I ask that the petition for review be denied. Thank you.
Mr. Winton.
Your Honor, it is a factual question whether the NTSB on page 18 of his decision, A298 of the record, the law judge did not dismiss the case with prejudice. That factual determination needs to be.
I don't know why that's factual. I mean, I think they're making a determination similar to what the federal rules do for civil cases, that given the context here, we're not going to characterize these kinds of dismissals as being with prejudice.
And I would agree with you if the federal rules were as the rules of procedure for the NTSB were as instructive as the federal rules. For instance, I looked at Federal Rule 41, and what it said, the laws interpreting it, were that if a plaintiff wants to dismiss with prejudice, basically the court has no discretion to say no, because you can't force a plaintiff to trial. Same thing in this case. If Judge Fowler would have said to the FAA, you know what? No, I'm going to force you to go to hearing. He can't. He didn't have that opportunity. He didn't have the procedural rules to do that. So we really need to remand not to the board, obviously, but to the law judge for that factual determination, whether he intended it to terminate the proceeding and then give me the opportunity to apply for EJIA fees, which he did. But if we look at the rules of procedure for the NTSB, 826.24, it specifically says that for purposes of this rule, final disposition means the latter of issuance of a final order or voluntary dismissal. They talk about the exact scenario that we have here. They allow me to file my EJIA fee at the termination of the proceeding with a final disposition incurring as a result of a voluntary dismissal, which the FAA did here. Case in point. Again, we need to look at the case of Mr. Pasternak, where this court said if there is no substantial evidence to support the board's reasoning, it must be vacated. That's Pasternak, 2010 U.S. App Lexis, 4035, February 26, 2010, citing Van Dyke versus NTSB 286, F3rd 594, found at 598.
Mr. Winter, where in your briefs did you say that this was a question of fact that should be reviewed as such?
Well, I argued all along that it was a dismissal with prejudice versus a dismissal not with prejudice. To me, that's a factual issue. The actual argument to come here today with...
You're riding the Pasternak horse.
I was reading Pasternak, and I said, this is the exact same scenario here. I mean, you know, the light bulb went on. But certainly, I preserve the right to make the argument, because if you read the government's brief, all over they say, this is without prejudice, therefore it doesn't apply. Well, if you knock down that factual scenario, guess what? Your whole argument falls apart.
Quite a different fact, quote unquote, than what was at issue in Pasternak.
It is, without a doubt. But I mean, in this case, it could be as simple as the chief law judge, making that statement. That's a factual determination, what he intended to do with that order terminating the proceeding. And remember, this court has already found that res judicata effect would certainly qualify as judicial relief, where, for example, it protected the prevailing school district in Strauss from having to pay damages and awarding attorney's fees to the defendant with a plaintiff voluntary move to dismiss the case because she lacked sufficient evidence. That was the case of Claiborne. In this case, it was obvious when I pushed the FAA, we're going to trial, they realized they didn't have factual evidence to support their claim. They dismissed it voluntarily with prejudice. If you look at the record, it'll show you that there is an email from counsel to me saying, we're starting to pull some of the charges off of this case. But if you waive attorney's fees, then we'll dismiss the whole thing. So I'm proceeding under the direction of the last 20 years of experience that if the FAA pulls out voluntary dismissal, as the rules say, I'm entitled to attorney's fees. All of a sudden, they change the rules of the game. And Ramaprakash tells us if you start changing the rules of the game arbitrarily and capriciously, then we don't have an opportunity.
Well, they explained why. The case case law has developed in this area in a different way from how it was previously.
If it's a rational analysis, yes. But it sort of seems like ad hocery, where a case came out last week. It is administrator against or in the application of AirTrek, under the case that I handled. That case, the FAA held on to 38 factual allegations. In the middle of the trial, started pulling them away, realizing that judge is going to rule against us. And if they rule against us, Wing's going to make a claim for fees. 50% of that case disappeared by the fourth day of a nine-day hearing. Wouldn't you know, when I made a claim for $240,000 in attorney's fees, the FAA said, you didn't prevail because we withdrew. A la application of Turner and Koonin. That case just came out March 4th. And what the FAA said and the NTSB said in that decision was, well, we yet have another factual scenario where we will allow prevailing party status, even though there wasn't a decision on the merits with regard to the withdrawn claims, because they were done in the midst of a trial. Well, what am I supposed to do as a practitioner if they dismiss it a week before, a minute before, a day before, or if I find...
You prevailed in that other case?
I prevailed only with regard to the withdrawn charges. Go figure that one out. The judge actually... There were about 14 allegations. Eight of them were dismissed voluntarily by the FAA, six remaining. The law judge threw three of those six out and kept three. The three that the law judge threw out on the merits, he didn't give me attorney's fees for. He gave me attorney's fees only for those that were voluntarily withdrawn at the hearing.
Is that case on appeal?
No, because under 5 U.S.C. 504, the government can't appeal that again.
They can't appeal the order of attorney's fees?
Correct. Before the NTSB, that's correct. They appealed it from the law judge to the NTSB. And the NTSB just issued this order March 4th. It's NTSB order number 5510, dated March 4th, 2010. I provided it to the court as a supplemental. If you would like, I can provide adequate copies for. So we ask that you vacate the order of the NTSB in this case against Captains Turner and Koonin. And in an alternative, we ask that you remand the case back to the law judge for determination of whether or not he intended to dismiss this case with prejudice and a recalculation of the fees. I thank you for your indulgence.
Thank you, Mr. Winton. Mr. Kingsley, thank you. Case is submitted.